The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Novak Djokovic, still the king of center court, and Wimbledon champion for a seventh time.
And the gentleman singles champion for 2022, Novak Djokovic!
Now there's the uncertainty. It's not just the majors, unfortunately, for him, John. It's any tennis server. Where is he going to play next? To be able to play in North America.
Well, I hope this is
leading up to the U.S. Open. It's a great moment.
These politicians are getting in the way too much. They did it in Australia. Let's let the guy come in and play in the U.S. I mean, come on. This is ridiculous. But I don't make those decisions. I hope that someone makes the right one and allows him to play.
John McEnroe there with some comments at the end of that clip that surely would have gotten him banned or censored just, what, 12 months ago, 18 months ago? On today's show, you're going to see some clips. You're going to hear some statements that you could not have said, certainly not on TV, not on Fox News, not on whoever was carrying this, I guess ESPN. But he's like, hey, let him in. Let him in and let him play. At the U.S. Open. There's a Novak Djokovic coming through. He finally could get into it. He's missed the last two majors because of the vaccine. You know what's interesting? Sam noted this morning. He was playing all through the sickness, the disease, the pandemic. And then as that begins to taper off, and then there's all the hoopla surrounding the vaccine, then these new rules put in place by all the communists leading our Western nations. Basically saying, well, now you can't travel unless you get the vaccine. Djokovic nearly won the Grand Slam in 2021, just last year. But then this cult-like obsession. You gotta have the vaccine. Never mind the side effects. Never mind the fact that people still get COVID. It's a rule now. And it applies to Australia. It applies to France. It applies to a lot of nations right around the world. As I was saying to you last week, good for him making a principled stand. No, I will sacrifice my career if I have to. Where do you see courageous leadership such as that today? Where do you see among politicians in the West, anyone who's willing to just turn and walk away from, what, tens of millions of dollars? You look at the way the Biden crime family operates, for example, or the Pelosi's, or you just go right down the list. They will sell out the entire nation of theirs for a few million dollars. And here's an individual, a family man, by the way. His daughter was there in attendance at the end of the show or the end of the tournament yesterday. A principled stand. We've got a few more clips from him and quite a few others to get to on today's show. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Day that we certainly appreciate you joining our growing audience. You can get to the live audio stream of this show through CRN Digital Talk Radio, or if you want to see our beautiful set here in Edmond, Oklahoma, just come to our website, thetrumpet.com. Go to thetrumpet.com/live. Takes you to the live stream page every morning here in the Central Time Zone of the United States, 11 a.m. or 11:05 after the news at the top of the hour. 12 noon on the East Coast and out West, of course, here in the U.S., it's 9 a.m. every single weekday morning. Lots to get to, as I say, on today's show. And you know, the sports clips, I'm not going to have them all the time. Don't get worried about it. But it does seem fitting as we come into our annual summer educational program. That starts tonight, as we've got young people coming in from all over the world, if they can get into the United States. If they're coming from Canada, you've practically got to sneak in through the border. And of course, they still can't come from Australia. Because why? Not even COVID. Vaccine! It's because of the vaccine. Well, we've got 120 that are going to come in, hopefully, God willing. And we're going to have a rousing, active, exciting SEP summer educational program experience these next 3 weeks. And all of the activity heads are getting their various sports activities ready and set, including me for the basketball program. But there's softball, there's volleyball, there's soccer, there's rugby, all kinds of sporting events. Water polo in the new pond that we just constructed this past summer. They were swimming in the upper pool just last night, 13 feet deep. We finally have an actual water polo site, or at least one that's not in a pool where, you know, half of the guys are dying because they're swimming in the deep end, and the other half are like the jolly green giant in the shallow end of the pool, standing up, not having to really swim at all. Well, now it's evened out. Now they're all going to be swimming, and no doubt getting very, very tired. Water polo is quite a strenuous and physically exerting sport, to be sure. So they're all gearing up for these mini activities. And of course, you see, as I said last week on the show, you see lots and lots of lessons and parallels that we can draw on from these perfectionists in the sporting world. God really and truly does want for us to strive for perfection, spiritually above all. And all the more, to just paraphrase a little bit from what Paul said in Hebrews 10, as we see the day approaching, I mean, really attending to these needs, these admonitions from God and Jesus Christ. As we draw near to the end of this age, one thing that we stressed at the end of last week is just all of these perilous events and times that we're living in. I can remember back in the day, Herbert Armstrong, he was, I think, in the midst of a sermon where he talked about how that governments in the world today, they were collapsing or toppling, it seemed. I think he said every year or two. I think he said on average it's every couple years there's a government that collapses in this world today. Well, look at what's happened just in the last week. Over the weekend, you've got basically Sri Lanka is in the midst of a revolution. I mean, that's happening right now, even as we speak. And on Friday's program, I told you about the assassination of Shinzo Abe. He's one of the more popular prime ministers in Japan's history. He was prime minister just a year or two ago. Gunned down in a gun-free zone, by the way. Boris Johnson's government, gone. He's on the way out. The government in Israel, in turmoil. How many snap elections are we going to have in Israel? Those are happening, it seems, every 12 to 18 months. Is this world what you would call stable? Do you find a nice solid foundation underneath the nations of this world? Even some of the most prosperous nations, the most powerful nations. And you see instability through and through. Look at the United States. I mean, you've got an illegitimate president backed by Barack Obama. Obama carrying out his third term, carrying on with his vow to fundamentally transform the United States of America. America under attack. In the Netherlands, the farmers have had enough. And they're out on the streets, by the way, telling the truth. Look, it's not even just that they want to eliminate these carbon emissions or whatever. They want our land. They want control. The farmers are right. And so they're taking to the streets in their tractors, protesting in the only way that they know how, in the same way that those Canadian protesters did just a few months back. People are fed up. People have had enough. I didn't even mention Ukraine. The ongoing war, it's gone on now for months. And what about the financial crises? Well, what about the curse of inflation that's driving so many of these protests in places like Sri Lanka? This world is on edge, as I said last week. This world is about to explode in violence. I mean, you've got the leader in Sri Lanka that's basically fleeing for his life. Nations all over the world in crisis. And not even just third world nations in faraway places. It's hitting us right at home, those of us in the more prosperous Western nations of today. Perilous times, urgent times. And yet, right in the midst of all these events, right in the midst of all this turmoil, here we are, bringing all of these young people together from all over the world to teach them about God's way of life, to teach them about the solutions to these many problems, to these dangerous times that we're in, to give them hope, to get them grounded in the church, to get them to build a strong spiritual foundation, to get them to aim for perfection. Matthew 5 and verse 48, to strive to be perfect like their Father in heaven is perfect. And Novak Djokovic, you've certainly got a perfectionist that's won Wimbledon 7 times. I think yesterday was his 4th in a row. He's been dominant. He's perhaps the best ever. He's just one behind Nadal. Let's all hope he passes him. Nadal's vaxxed. And Djokovic is the anti-vaxxer. He's the evil one. And yet even John McEnroe is saying, what is wrong with our leaders? Let him in. Let him in. Let him play. Couldn't have said that a couple years ago. Have you noticed that people are now saying things that we said and wrote in the trumpet 2 years ago? I think it's better to take a principled stand, even if you're a lone voice. The Bible speaks of Herbert Armstrong and his ministry, the end time Elijah role that he fulfilled. He says, or God says about him in Isaiah 40, that he was a voice crying out in the wilderness. Nobody listened. Nobody paid attention. Nobody heeded the warning. And yet Mr. Armstrong stood alone. He took a principled stand. And look at how God blessed him. Look at the opening statement of the autobiography of Herbert Armstrong. It's right there in the very first paragraph of the introduction. It talks about how that this is the story of growth. Wow. I'm going to be elaborating on that some tonight at the orientation for our summer youth program participants. The story of growth. Well, that's inspiring. And of course, the whole story there in the autobiography is about one man who yielded to God and his government, who was led by the Spirit of God. And yes, it was a mustard seed beginning, for sure. Mr. Armstrong's work, in large part, started on foot back in the 1930s. He was walking around in the Willamette Valley of Oregon, Western Oregon. That's how the work of God started. And yet, look at where it was in 1985. Even with the 120,000 attending services and millions of coworkers and the plain truth going out to 7-8 million people, even still, the world, for the most part, ignored Herbert Armstrong and his ministry. Well, you compare the 1980s to where we are today. Life was pretty good in the United States. Ronald Reagan's second term in office. Booming economy, America really flexing its military might. It seemed like that America, as the world's policeman, was providing a sense of stability, not just to America, but to the whole world. Well, now look at where we are. Did people heed the warnings that Mr. Armstrong proclaimed for decades? Did they heed the warning that he proclaimed about the communist infiltration of the United States of America? I don't think so. We've talked about it, of course. There's some dire activities and actions and events just ahead of us. But beyond that, hope. There is hope, lasting hope, even for this world, even for this nation. Listen to the Wimbledon champion again from yesterday, clip 5.
It's always has been and will be the most special tournament in my heart, the one that motivated me, inspired me to start playing tennis in a small little mountain resort in Serbia where my parents used to run the restaurant. I was 4.5, 5 years old, and I saw Pete Sampras win his first Wimbledon in 92, and I asked my dad and mom to buy me a racket, and my first image of tennis was grass and Wimbledon, and I always dreamed of coming here, just playing in this court, and then, of course, realizing the childhood dream and winning this trophy. And every single time it gets more and more meaningful and special, and so I'm very blessed and very thankful to be standing here with the trophy.
He talked there at the start of that clip about the motivation and the inspiration that he had as a four-year-old. And sure, it's just aimed in the direction of a sport. Grass courts, to be precise. That's his love. He plays all over the world. He plays on hard surfaces. He plays on clay surfaces. He plays on grass. And he loves Wimbledon. And he's won it 7 times. And he got the vision for winning Wimbledon when he was 4 years old. And the story of Novak Djokovic in many ways is the story of growth. At least with respect to the tennis world. Here's a man, a young man, a little boy from Serbia, who got that racket, who dreamed about playing on grass, and worked and worked and worked to improve his game. And as I was saying last week, what an inspiration that is, or should be, for us. The very first law of success, that's in Mr. Armstrong's booklet, The 7 Laws of Success, the very first law is to set the right goal. And there's other laws to go with it. Without a goal, we don't have direction in life. Without the right goal, we may hit a target, but it may not be the right target. But if you set the right goal and then you add to that education and health and drive and resourcefulness and perseverance and contact with God, it makes all the difference. It makes all the difference. It's what ensures that these young people that are going to be coming into Edmond, Oklahoma today and sweating and playing and having fun and hearing too from God's ministers and learning from God's ministers and from their counselors about the truth of God, and then learning to put it into practice, to pray to God, to study the Bible, to get them on right and proper course in the hope that they will stay with it spiritually, and that they'll aim high, and that they'll go for the prize, like Paul said. Paul even said, look, there's only one that obtains the top prize, so go for it. Go for it. Aim big. Set your sights on that crown, that imperishable crown. Don't let, Revelation 3 talks about not letting anyone take away that crown. Listen to one more comment from Novak yesterday, clip 6.
I've said it many times, this tournament is extra special for me because it has been the first tournament that I've ever watched as a kid that got me to start playing tennis. I don't take any wins for granted, particularly not in Wimbledon. In contrary, actually, it feels, every time feels a bit different, especially in its own way. Of course, having family and close people in my life here to share this victory with them, it was beautiful.
Now, as you know, we've paid attention to this story. Also, just not just because of the Matthew 5:48 principle of aiming for perfection, but also because of this man's principled stand against the vaccine, against the cult-like obsession to just do what the experts say, no matter what it does to your body. Can you imagine, nation? This is probably one of the most fit human beings on earth. This is probably one of the most healthiest human beings on earth.
And you've got the experts in Australia and France and the United States saying, no, 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 keep him out. It's not safe. It's not safe to let Novak into the United States of America. But what is, you know what is safe to let into the United States of America? Communist infiltration. You know what else is safe to let right into the White House? Hunter Biden. The one addicted to sex, to crack cocaine. I mean, he's on video arguing with a hooker about how much cocaine he's got on the scale. Who films this? Who films it? How does it end up on his laptop? And how do these communist actors in the media get away with covering this up? Or treating it like it's no big deal? Hunter Biden's now in the greeting party of the White House. Yeah, he's in the front row of the gatherings at the White House of the United States of America. What a world. An upside down world. That's what it says in Isaiah 5. A sick world. Nations sick from head to toe. Here's Djokovic. I'm sure he's got his issues, his problems with some things. But man, he's in, as far as the world is concerned, he's doing some things right. With his wife, with his children, with his career, and with his body. And yet, thanks to Anthony Fauci and company, Nova, it's too dangerous for him to come into the United States of America. Oh, yes. It's a crazy world. Speaking of things that just simply couldn't have been said, 18 months ago, listen to this from Tucker Carlson's monologue on Friday night. This is clip one.
Taking a look back for a moment, the coronavirus pandemic, that would be the virus itself and our government's response to it, turns out to have been the single most destructive event to take place in the United States in our lifetime. So destructive that it's going to be many years before we know for certain what the last 2.5 years have cost all of us. But even now, the outlines of it are clear. COVID crashed our economy, first and foremost. GDP fell by the biggest percentage since the Great Depression. 22 million Americans lost their jobs in the first 2 months of the lockdowns. Remember that? What you may not know is that at least 5 million of them never went back to work. They dropped out of the workforce, apparently for good. At the same time as fewer people were working, thanks to the profligate lunacy of our leaders, our national debt rose by nearly $10 trillion, unprecedented. And along with the debt, our debt to China also rose. And then at the level of our society, every bad thing became more common. Drug ODs, suicide, illiteracy, crime, all of them skyrocketed. So did obesity, anxiety, and alcoholism, and virtually every other marker of social decay. Marriages and birth rates, meanwhile, dropped. So did church attendance. We could go on, but you know what happened because you live here.
The cure is worse than the disease. Remember that? Remember that from more than 2 years ago at thetrumpet.com, in the Trumpet magazine, Tomorrow's News Today? Every bad thing became more common. Every bad thing became worse. Not because of COVID, but because of lockdowns. Because of the government reaction to it. Some would say overreaction. We'd take it a step further. Even a step further than Tucker did. Tucker's now talking about this in terms of it being an attack. You couldn't say that a year or two ago. No, that gets you censored right away, because we're just supposed to go along. We're sheep, right? We're all meant to be good little sheeple. If the expert says get the jab, you get the jab. Otherwise, can't travel into New York, because it would make New York, listen now, it would make New York unsafe. Because, you know, New York right now is a picture of safety and perfection. Safety and good health. Let's put it that way. Listen again to Tucker from his monologue Friday night, clip two.
So on every level, COVID crushed America. Centuries-old traditions just evaporated. It's a different country and not a better one. But that doesn't mean that everybody suffered under COVID. Countless small businesses went under that devastated our middle class. But at the same time, thanks to the lockdowns, the tech monopolies thrived. Apple, Google, Amazon all saw their market caps explode. Jeff Bezos wound up much richer than ever before, not that he needed the money. But no group benefited more from the COVID pandemic than the leaders of communist China. By April of 2021, that would be more than a year into COVID, when we were suffering here, in China, the GDP had reached the highest level ever recorded. China's economy was growing faster after the pandemic than it had been before the pandemic. And as a result of that, China will soon overtake the United States as the world's dominant economy. Soon. Now, if someone had predicted that to you 10 years ago, you would have laughed. It would have seemed ridiculous. But that was before COVID. Now it's real, and COVID made it possible. In other words, the coronavirus didn't simply change the United States. The coronavirus changed the balance of power in the world forever. So when you think of COVID that way, and that's the way the people who run governments think about it, trust us, when you think of it that way, it becomes pretty obvious that this was more than an overhyped public health emergency. In fact, it may very well have been a crime, the greatest crime in history.
Wow. So the COVID may well have been the greatest crime in history? Do you think he could have said that 12, 18 months ago? Of course not. Of course not. No, the Fox executives would not have tolerated that sort of narrative, that sort of line of thinking. The Murdoch boys would have said, no way, Tucker. No, don't talk about this in terms of it being an attack. Who did he say benefited from this the most? The communists. Now, he focuses primarily on the communists in China, but we've got them here in the United States as well. What a question to contemplate. At this time, at this moment in our history, who benefited from the COVID? Furthermore, he says, look at how this changed the balance of power. Now, he's talking about it in terms of U.S. and China. But let's talk about it in terms of Donald Trump and Joe Obama. Look at how it changed the balance of power in the United States of America. We have an appendix in, it's the third one, I believe, of America Under Attack. The title, Was the Coronavirus Crisis Engineered? Wow, you talk about tomorrow's news today. That's coming out in the new book. The newly expanded book, America Under Attack. What a title. Was the coronavirus crisis engineered? Listen to what my father writes. The emerging picture makes an absolutely incredible scenario look more and more plausible that American leaders, contributed to engineering COVID-19 as a bioweapon for fundamentally transforming America. You see, Tucker's on the right track. He's just not going far enough. We'll go as far as we need to go. We'll go the distance with God. How about that? You heard it here first. This article or this Appendix C from America Under Attack, it talks about Barack Obama's science czar. His name is John P. Holdren. You can read all about this toward the end of America Under Attack. Print version comes out early August. The online version is available now at the website, thetrumpet.com. A lot of our members have already read through it. It's a powerful, powerful message. This John Holdren fellow, he's written extensively on global environmental change. In 1973, Holdren encouraged a decline in fertility to well below replacement in the U.S. because 200, this is quoting him, 210 million now is too many, and 280 million by 2040 is likely to be much too many. So here's someone who wanted to control the population, who wanted to lower the birth rates in the United States. He's an extremist. And this was Barack Hussein Obama's, this was his science czar. Now listen again to what we write in Appendix C of America Under Attack. It says, on July 5, 2016, Nature magazine published an interview with Dr. Holdren in which he said, here's quoting Holdren again, I'm going to China this week for a strategic and economic dialogue and for a U.S.-China dialogue in innovation policy. It says, we have a lot of cooperation with China on biomedical issues. We talk to them all the time about gain-of-function research and about gene-editing issues. I mean, this is in 2016. This is the tail end of Barack Obama's administration. He's the science czar for Barack Obama, and he's bragging. Oh, yeah, I go to China all the time. Gain of function,
That's just a euphemism for bioweapons. That's what it amounts to. And he's there bragging. Oh yeah, we're funding it. We're helping. They're our colleagues. They're our partners. The communists, in other words. To go back to Tucker's statement, who benefited from the COVID? Who benefited from that disease created by human beings in the Wuhan lab? That would be the communists. Not just the ones in China. The ones in the United States as well. What did Obama say in his memoir? Yeah, I hung out with the Marxist professors. And then who can forget about Frank Marshall Davis? A proud communist. That's right. To say nothing of Jeremiah Wright and all of these other cast of characters. Obama hung out with the radicals, the extremists, the communists, the Marxists. And he bragged about it. And you know who gave him cover for not just 8 years? They're doing it through to this day. They swoon still. That would be the communists in the media. Oh, yeah. Remember Michael Hastings? He just laughed about it. Have you ever swooned before Obama? Oh, let me tell you, have I ever? I love throwing him some softball questions. I mean, that's some kind of demonic influence, don't you think? That's will worship, Colossians 2. That's the worship of the will. They never gave Donald Trump a free pass like that. If I have time, we'll get to Kinzinger's comments recently about Trump. He's just saying, yeah, Trump's going to go away for sure. That's their wishful thinking. We know about the prophecies. 2 Kings 14, what God's doing. But the way these people think and reason. This is from America Under Attack. It says, Holdren was collaborating with the Chinese to make viruses more deadly. Obama, Holdren, and their staff trusted communist China more than they trusted U.S. researchers. Now, that's the truth. That's the truth. And you're not going to hear about that. You're not going to read about that anywhere else except at thetrumpet.com, except on this program, except on the Key of David, except in our Trumpet magazine, except in America Under Attack. It's coming out in a couple weeks. You can get to it first at our website, thetrumpet.com. Listen to this. Again, Appendix C from the new America Under Attack. It says, Congressman Guy Reschenhaler uncovered $1.1 million in Obama-era taxpayer funding funneled to the Wuhan Institute of Virology for gain-of-function research. The goal was to create a man-made virus by inserting a spiked protein from a wild bat coronavirus into a mouse-adapted SARS-CoV backbone, or COV. It says the U.S. Agency for International Development awarded this funding, adding to the nearly $600,000 sent to Wuhan from the National Institute of Allergy and Infectious Diseases, which is run by, you guessed it, Dr. Anthony Fauci. Here comes Tony Fauci. You know, the one that says Novak Djokovic is an extreme danger to the United States of America. Why? Because he has COVID? No. Because he hasn't gotten the jab. He hasn't gotten the double jab and then the two boosters to go with it. It says here, clearly Dr. Fauci knew about the dangerous genetics research being done in Wuhan. He calls it gain-of-function research, but that's just a technical title for bioweapons research. He was making mouse and bat coronaviruses more deadly to human beings, and he disguised it as vaccine research. Can you believe they've gotten away with this? Now, some of the truth is coming out through Tucker and other sources such as that. They just don't go quite far enough with it, as I said earlier. But they've gotten away with it. They've gotten away with it. Look at how it's changed the balance of power in the world and in the United States of America. Who benefited from the creation? And that's what it was. It's a man-made creation. And we're here to ask, along with Tucker, who benefited from the creation of coronavirus? A lot of people did. Now, a lot of people have suffered because of it, or because of the policies in response to it, and Tucker laid that out brilliantly. But who benefited?
Well, you got big tech, you got China, and you got the communists. And you certainly have Barack Obama and his puppet, Joe Biden. Did they benefit from coronavirus? They never would have won otherwise. Okay, so let's just think it through. Let's just think it through with some common sense, some good logical connections here, and consider, would Joe Biden have won in 2020 were it not for the mail-in ballot boxes that were put up all over Fulton County, or in Wisconsin, in Michigan, in Maricopa County in Arizona? Of course not. Of course they couldn't have pulled it off. One final quote here. It says here, Dr. Fauci was funding gain-of-function research in China while simultaneously warning the American people to brace for a pandemic. He never mentioned, you remember, I kind of flown over some of the details here, but remember, Obama and them, they were shocked that Trump somehow won at the end of 2016. Then Obama, on the way out, he lifts what little restrictions were there on gain-of-function research and said that, hey, we need to keep funding these projects. And then you had Dr. Fauci, and I believe this was even days before the inauguration of Donald Trump, Fauci, who said in the next few years, there's going to be a pandemic. How did he know? How did the good doctor know that it was going to happen, no doubt, during the Donald Trump presidency? Why didn't it happen during Obama's years? No, it was reserved for the Trump presidency. And it came, listen to me, it came at the perfect time. An election year. February, March of 2020. And then, I mean, Stacey Abrams and them, they started rolling up their sleeves, doing some back channel dealings behind closed doors. Hey, got to have the ballot boxes in place. Furthermore, we've got to send out tens of millions of ballots just to everybody. Even if there's six going to one address under six different names, just get the ballots out. I mean, people got to vote. We don't want to deprive people from voting. This is what they told us. They got away with it. And then Joe Biden, for his part, remember the month before the election? We have put together the most extensive voter fraud organization in the history of the United States. And then all the Axios people, remember them saying, now just brace yourself, on election night there's going to be a seemingly just overwhelming red wave, but we're going to have to wait this one out, maybe for days, before we finally find out that it was in fact a blue wave. Now, after the fact, we find out, after he's supposedly gotten 81 million votes, that he actually lost he lost seats in the House. He lost all of the bellwether counties except for one, I believe. I mean, Obama outperformed Biden across the board except for the very top line, 81 million votes. Who benefited? Who was it that benefited from the COVID? That's a pretty good question that Tucker asked the other night. Dr. Fauci, he was funding gain-of-function research. He never mentioned he was involved in the dangerous manipulation of bat coronaviruses to produce a potential pandemic pathogen, but he seemed to know that the world was heading into a serious infectious disease crisis. The fact that he said this day, after Obama reauthorized bioweapons research, makes it even more suspicious. Well, I will say that it does. Suspicious. That's being nice. Of course. Of course it was rigged. Of course they used it as a pretext to cheat. Of course that, you know, because you know how much they benefited from it. Just like China has benefited from it. And how perfect, really, to have a family in the White House who loves them some communists in the CCP party. Oh, they love the Chinese. Give them oil from the strategic reserves. Why not? I mean, they've given hundreds of millions and millions of dollars. Probably a lot of crack to go with it. I mean, this is unbelievable. What is happening right before our eyes? I tell you, it's put together in a way unlike any other publication or source. In our new book, America Under Attack, if you're listening to us, if you're reading from our website, if you're a subscriber to the Trumpet Magazine, you know it's being exposed. Look at the dreadful consequences of that stolen election from just a year and a half ago. Here's Chuck Todd from Over the Weekend, clip 7.
Biden was elected to restore competency and stability to Washington after Donald Trump. But his job approval trails other recent presidents, including Trump, at this point in the election cycle. After a lingering pandemic, the chaotic withdrawal from Afghanistan, failure to stem rising costs, failure to pass voting rights legislation, and a failure to substantially address climate change or immigration challenges.
Well, they're pretty much piling it on, these propagandists in the media. They know something's terribly, terribly wrong with what's happening. Of course, they still see it as a lack of going after full throttle these left-wing agenda items. But they also see the troubles, the problems, the perilous times we're in, the dangerous times that we've entered into. And they see the fact that this man in his late 70s is suffering from the early to advanced stages of dementia. And all the people around him covering for this sickness. And he's repeating things on the teleprompter, as you probably saw over the weekend. It's a sad and pathetic display. And we're supposed to play along, just like we were supposed to play along with the vaccines and the lockdowns and the pandemic and the fact that everybody was dying from this, including little babies, little children. They just lied. You know, they had this investigation into those border agents that were supposed, what did they say, the radicals in the Democrat Party? That this was like an apartheid state or this was racism of the highest order. And those agents have been cleared. Nothing happened. Nobody whipped anybody. They were just trying to enforce the border. That's all. They were just trying to keep people out who weren't lawfully coming in. And all of, remember the media just jumping on board like a pack of wolves. It's just like they did with this story. The 10-year-old. What you remember the rape victim? This was just a week ago. Yeah, she was raped. She was made pregnant by the rapist. She had to cross state lines because, well, her state, don't you know, her state didn't allow abortions anymore. Thanks to Clarence Thomas. And a few people on the internet have tried to verify this story. You know, the one that Andrea Mitchell just proudly said to Kristi Noem, listen, are you then saying in South Dakota that if a 10-year-old is raped, that you're not going to try to make it possible for her to have an abortion? Well, we now know that that story can't be verified. Isn't that amazing? They lie. They lie. It's all about the will worship. And they will go, if it fits comfortably in their narrative, whether it's a fake story about rape, a fake story about a vaccine, a fake story about the election, a fake story about this, whatever it is, they'll go with it. They'll go with it. And then when it's corrected later, like in the case of the border agents on those horses, well, they don't come back and say, yeah, you know, we got it wrong and we're somewhat embarrassed. They're so far beyond. They've progressed so far beyond the horse whipping story that they won't even bring it up. No, they'll just move right on. Well, as I say, there's some outlets beginning to pile it on because they see the curses as they're setting in. The New York Times over the weekend about Joe Biden. It says after months of gentle distancing, the media's come to Jesus finally happened after the White House botched the response to the Supreme Court overturning Roe v. Wade. CNN published an article last Wednesday titled, "After String of Supreme Court Setbacks, Democrats Wonder Whether the Biden White House is Capable of Urgency Moment, the Urgency the Moment Demands." It says here, top Democrats complain that the president isn't acting with, or perhaps is even capable of, the urgency the moment demands, it says in this piece. Listen to this. Rudderless, aimless, and hopeless. That's how one member of Congress described this White House. You know, the White House that has Hunter in there to greet visitors. Rudderless? Really? Aimless? Hopeless? An approval rating that's below 30% now? says here 24 leading Democrat politicians and operatives, as well as several within the West Wing, tell CNN they feel this goes deeper than questions of ideology and posture. Instead, they say it gets to questions of basic management. These are some of the comments or the feedback that was leaking out last week. And then the Washington Post, coming forward to this past weekend, the Washington Post basically built an article around that CNN piece. I'm kind of quoting from a different various sources here as I go. But it said how the White House struggled to respond to the abortion ruling, and that many Democrats were dismayed by the slow-footed response to the abortion ruling. Now, as we've covered, they had to leak out that opinion was coming because they had to cover up 2,000 mules. That's the truth of it. And so they preempted themselves. And we get to the summer ruling, comes out a few weeks ago, and there's no widespread protests across the country over Roe v. Wade. Just the lies, like Andre Mitchell said about the 10-year-old, the bogus story about the 10-year-old. I mean, they're trying as hard as they can to stir up incitement, stir up strife, anger, protests, bitterness, because they love abortion. And some protesters have even been honest enough to admit that. We love killing babies. We love killing babies. What a sick world this is. It says here, rudderless, aimless, hopeless. I read that. Further on, it says, for many Democrats, however, it was too little too late. Just one more example over the 2 weeks in which Biden and his team struggled to come up with a muscular plan of action on abortion rights, even though the Supreme Court ruling had been presaged 2 months earlier with the leak of a draft opinion. That was unprecedented. It was strategically planned by Barack Obama. And then you look at this. You look at this, the New York Times over the weekend, suggesting that Joe Biden is too old to govern. He's 79 years old, after all. So he's losing the New York Times. He's losing the Washington Post. He's even losing CNN to some degree. And meanwhile, you've got Donald Trump carrying on with his campaigning. He's up in Alaska over the weekend campaigning for Sarah Palin and others. And people are lining up, and you've probably seen the fast motion video of all these Trump supporters lining up outside of an arena in Anchorage, Alaska. When's the last time you've heard of a big crowd showing up for anything at Anchorage? No offense to our friends in Anchorage. Everywhere that he goes, the crowds turn out in droves. He went on for 90 minutes, an hour and a half speech, Alaska Airlines Center. More than 5,000 people in there, people watching it on the big screen just outside. And of course, the media doing everything possible to cover it up, to pretend like, well, Donald Trump's, he's going away. Donald Trump has disappeared. Listen to Adam Kinzinger. He's the outgoing Republican on that sham of a circus committee, the January 6th committee. This is what he said over the weekend about Donald Trump. Clip 3.
Again, what does history say in 5 or 10 years? Because I can guarantee, well, I can get about as close as I can to guaranteeing that in about 10 years, there's not going to have been a single Trump supporter that exists anywhere in the country. It's like Nixon. There were a lot of people that supported Nixon until he was out of office, and then everybody was like, oh, nobody supported Nixon. On some of these media outlets, to not say anything contradictory to what Donald Trump is saying. He's in essence a cult leader right now.
Okay, forget about the inflammatory rhetoric there at the end. The part that's laugh out loud worthy to me is in the middle there, where he says everybody supported Nixon, and then when he's out of office for a while, we found out that nobody supported Nixon. Well, which is it? Either everybody supported him, or no, you can't have it both ways. You mean everybody supported him when he was in office, and then we found out later that, oh, actually nobody supported him. Well, they can maybe change their opinion of him. I suppose that's what he means there. But if you're trying to use that as a parallel to what's happening in the world of Donald Trump, everybody supported him and did so even more during the election of 2020. He was quite unlike a lot of his predecessors who lost votes 4 years after their first term. Donald Trump was gaining support. And then now, here he is. He's out of office. He's been out of office for a year and a half. He's just a private resident in Florida. And yet, wherever he goes, Las Vegas, Anchorage, the Carolinas, Nashville, Tennessee, wherever he goes, that's what you hear there from Adam Kinzinger. It's going to be interesting to see how he's remembered 10 years from now. He may not even be remembered in about 4 months. He's not even going to be in Congress in a few months. And it's funny, isn't it, to hear these people and their twisted and perverse logic, really wishful thinking. He said last week, by the way, remember the Cassidy testimony that he went for the clavicles? Donald Trump was in that Secret Service SUV. He had his hand on the wheel, and he was going to, according to riveting testimony from Cassidy Hutchinson, he was going for the clavicles, right? The clavicles. Just, I know you might fall out of your chair here, but this is serious. He's going for the clavicles. Then, there, within hours of that false testimony, the Secret Service guys said, hey, we're willing to come testify that that conversation never happened. That didn't happen in the SUV the way Cassidy says it happened. And you know what Kinzinger said about the Secret Service agent? He's a known liar. So if he comes forward and testifies, he can't be trusted. Now, going back to Cassidy and her testimony, listen to this from her riveting testimony a week or two ago. This is clip 8.
When Mr. Renato had recounted this story to me, he had motioned towards his clavicles.
So it was Mr. Renato that motioned to her, he went for the clavicles. And it was Mr. Renato, after her testimony, that then said, hey, we'll come forward and say, that didn't happen. I didn't say that. And that never happened in the car. And then, see if you can follow the logic, and then Adam Kinzinger comes out and says, well, if Renato comes forward, And she's cross-examined, and he has a different testimony. Just so you know, he can't be trusted because, well, he's been known to lie. Renato is her source. You see what I mean? Renato is the one that supposedly told her about the clavicles. She comes and testifies about the clavicles. Renato says it didn't happen, and Kinzinger, for his part, says, hey, we don't even want him to come forward to cross-examine or to present a different narrative or story because he's a liar. He's a liar. Listen to this from Democrat Zoe Lofgren. She's on the circus committee, the January 6th committee. She said recently, we never call in witnesses to corroborate other witnesses or to give their reaction to other witnesses. That's just not the way we work, says one of the Democrats on the committee of radical, angry Democrats that are wishing away Donald Trump. They just wish him away. He, in 10 years, you won't even remember Donald Trump. She says, we're not here. This is a Democrat on the committee trying to get to the truth, supposedly, of what happened on January 6th. And she admits, candidly, we never call in witnesses to corroborate other witnesses. That's basically her admitting, we're just here to tell you the narrative that we're trying to write. That's it. That's it. And they're doing a pretty good job of it. Not that a lot of people are listening, don't get me wrong, but 850 people have been arrested from the January 6th protest. What a world we're living in. The nation, the United States of America, under attack. Here again, I can't emphasize this new booklet quite enough. It's coming out in just a few weeks. Operators are standing by if you want to get in your advance request. The toll-free number is 1-866-930-3024. If you don't want to wait, go to thetrumpet.com and just go to the literature tab or the library tab, and you'll see America Under Attack. It's right there near the top of the page. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is The Trumpet Daily. If you'd like to email feedback to the show, you can write us td@thetrumpet.com. We thank you for joining us on today's show. We'll see you tomorrow.